Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
What? Abusing my Africa's. I don't know how to open this episode. Oh boy.
Take that back.
I'm Robert Evans. This is Behind the Bastards, a podcast where we talk about horrible people. And today we're talking about horrible people who abused Africa. My guest today is Sophia! How are you doing, Sophia?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being on the show. Now, we talked last for an episode about a little lady named Georgia Tan.
Yeah. Some people might say the most sad and fucked up episode of your podcast. Or
some
at least
people,
that's what a lot of the tweets I got said.
Yeah, I would say that is the saddest and most fucked up episode of my podcast.
It was fun when people were tweeting and like being like, haha, that's a good joke for something so sad. And then it got really real when people were tweeting and being like, I think my family history involves this.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah.
I am not prepared to handle this. I am a stand-up comedian.
And then we got people making fan art about Ric Flair being stolen as a baby, which I both appreciate and feel weird about, because I'm sure that's like the most traumatic chapter from Ric Flair's life. And
yes.
I don't know how to respectfully address what a nightmare that is.
Yes, and also I did ask for the fan art, so
you did.
It would
you did.
Be
you
bad
did.
Of me to condemn the people who then just executed beautifully on the fucked up thing I came up with. So I feel like let's keep that in the gray area. No one was more wrong than Georgia Tan.
Yeah, no one was, well, except for maybe our subject for today's episode, because this might be a darker story. It's not a darker story, because the scale of Georgia Tan is so awful. But this is, again, a story about an affluent young woman who injected herself into the lives of poorer people, thinking she knew better than them what they needed, and a whole lot of babies died.
Are you... Are you purposely only inviting me on episodes that involve child murder? Just
no.
Be honest right now.
No.
That
but...
took too long, honestly. That beat lets me know that the answer is yes. I feel like you're trying to challenge me
well,
as a comedian.
Maybe.
Challenge accepted, Robert.
Maybe, Sophia, it's just that I see something in you that I see in me, which is an ability to stare into the darker aspects of the human condition and look at that and analyze it and say, I want a picture of Ric Flair acknowledging that he was stolen as a baby.
thank you. That is the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
So, you know,
also,
I opened...
just being Russian, you know.
Yeah. I didn't want to say it's because you're Russian and can handle it,
but essentially, that's what you were saying.
Yes, yes. Every episode you're on is like the a Serbian film of Behind the Bastards, where we just like drill into the darkness of reality.
Yeah. I love that about us.
Yeah. Well, I opened this episode by saying, what's abusing my Africas, which was a terrible introduction, maybe my worst.
Yes. But
we are talking about someone who abused a whole lot of Africans today. We're talking about René Bach. Have you ever heard of René Bach?
No.
Nobody has. She is not yet famous. I have a feeling she's going to be soon, but we're kind of on the cutting edge of this one.
I love being avant-garde about murder.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She hasn't really gone viral yet, so we're gonna talk about that. But first, I want to talk about Kony 2012. Do you remember that PR campaign, whatever you want to call it, that awareness campaign, I guess?
Mm-hmm, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was like the 1 week or so when everyone in America cared about Uganda because of a poorly fact-checked documentary. People donated a bunch of money and they pasted stickers that said Kony 12 that you can still find on 1998 Toyota Corollas to this day. It was a whole thing. And then the creator of the documentary was caught masturbating in public, and there was a South Park episode making fun of that, and then we all kind of moved on from Kony 2012. It was like in the middle of San Diego, wasn't it? He had like a psychotic break.
Oh, I do remember story
yeah,
now.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that was a whole thing. Yeah.
So many things have happened since then.
It seems
like that was literally like 80,000 atrocities ago.
Yeah. It feels like it was 300 years ago. It feels older than World War One.
Yes.
But it was really just like 7 years back.
That's fucked up, man.
Yeah. Now, there was a brief period of time where the documentary's creator, the Invisible Children, like, company behind it, were lauded as, like, the shiny future of activism and, like, this is how we were going to, like, change the world in the future. And it was a heady time when Kony 2012 was still going viral. And during the heart of this fevered period, African writer Teju Cole posted this in a series of tweets. From Sachs to Kristoff to Invisible Children to TED, the fastest growth industry in the U.S. is the White Savior Industrial Complex. The White Savior supports brutal policies in the morning, founds charities in the afternoon, and receives awards in the evening. This world exists simply to satisfy the needs, including, importantly, the sentimental needs of white people and Oprah. The White Savior Industrial Complex is not about justice. It is about having a big emotional experience that validates privilege. Feverish worry over that awful African warlord, but close to the 1.5 million Iraqis died from an American war of choice. Worry about that. I deeply respect American sentimentality, the way one respects a wounded hippo. You must keep an eye on it, for you know it is deadly.
Damn.
Now, yeah, that's quite a line. I really... That's
good as hell.
Yeah, that's a real good line.
I mean, I feel called out, you know?
Yeah.
In a good way.
I think we're all supposed to.
Yeah, like, thank you.
Yeah. Now, as you might expect, Teju Cole took some shit for writing that. There were a couple of think pieces that went after him for it, and I'm not going to quote any of those here, but he was basically attacked for being a spoil sport and for the eternal crime of, you know, bringing race into it. People wondered, like, why should it matter that the people who made this documentary were white? Joseph Kony is an objectively bad dude, and the truth needed to get out, so, like, what's the harm? And, of course, the harm was that Kony 2012 was hot garbage. Joseph Kony's Lord's Resistance Army was not active in Uganda when the documentary went viral. It had no positive impact on the ground, and it had several negative impacts, as best elucidated by Ugandan human rights lawyer Busegwe Bwa Musigir in a 2015 interview. He said, to be honest, it seems what skeptics predicted has come true, that there would indeed be more of a lasting impact on how people, especially in the West, perceived Uganda than on the attainment of justice for victims of the LRA conflict. For the first time in a long time, some other monster was connected to the country than Idi Amin, and the questions about a Kony experience pop up in spaces where they are least expected. Imagine you are Ugandan at a youth conference somewhere in the West, and the conversation icebreaker is whether you are a former child soldier. Invisible Children may be closing, but I think many Ugandans will continue to be asked about Kony and whether they are one of his victims. The simplifying of the narrative has just added a new layer of stereotypes for Ugandans. This will take a while to wear off. You may have seen a campaign on the Guardian website, led by the Ugandan government, comparing Uganda and Spain as tourist destinations. Such are necessary because no one wants to visit a place where they may be entangled in a war they are not interested in. The image of Uganda and Africa as a permanent war zone was no doubt strengthened by the Kony 2012 campaign. So, Teju Cole was right. Kony 2012 hurt people living in Uganda by making their country look like a war-ravaged hellhole, hurting tourism, thus damaging their economy and the livelihood of many. But as far as consequences of white saviorism go, Kony 2012 was actually kind of the best-case scenario. And today we're going to talk about one of the worst-case scenarios. And this brings us back to René Bach. It was a long intro.
I mean, all I wanted to add to that is the question of, like, well, why is it bad if a white person tells a story about non-white people as long as the story is told? I mean, inherently, that question doesn't recognize that there is a bias in being a white person telling the story of someone who is not white. I think it just denies the idea that people should tell their own story and not have it be co-opted by someone who comes in and pretends or thinks they know what's best. But I think people don't often make that jump. They're just like, well, if you're helping and the intention is good, then
yeah,
the outcome is good, automatically good.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. That's sort of the whole story we're going to be talking about today. This idea that if the intention is good, then that's mostly what matters when it comes to activism. Because this is a story about someone whose intentions, I really do think, have been good this entire time, and it doesn't matter, because, spoilers, she kills like 100 babies. So,
like a Georgia Tan Jr. situation.
Like a Georgia Tan Jr. I mean, Georgia Tan, nobody came close to GT when it came to racking up that baby count, but this is pretty bad.
I mean, she's not putting up the same numbers, but
not putting up the same numbers. Like, she's the, I wish I knew enough about basketball to make a basketball joke about this, but I just don't.
I could make a basketball joke about this.
All right, let's do it.
I mean, if she, you would say that Georgia Tan's whole life is like a triple-double game, you know, where she's putting up numbers in like every category, like molestation, yes, mass murder, yes, my dad is a judge that forgave all of my stuff, yes, you know, that's what I think. And then you get it.
Yeah, I think I get it. I mean,
I'm just saying, and just putting up one stat is not as impressive as putting up stats in all three, like rebounds, shots, assists.
Yeah, this is just, René Bach is just putting up, I don't know, three-pointers? Again, not great at basketball here.
Three-pointers are really hard. So maybe not.
Maybe not. All right, we'll decide.
We'll come back. We'll come back to another sport. It'll be great.
Yeah. So René Bach is not a well-known person at this point. No major Western news source has covered her alleged crimes. I found out about this in the first place from just a series of tweets about René Bach from like some local African activists, people who were with a group called No White Saviors. They published an article in September 2018 about René. And then I did a little bit more looking, and I found an article by a young woman named Nikki Gagnon, and she provided a lot of evidence. And then I found even more evidence, including articles from local Ugandan news sources. So this is a story that's much better known in Uganda than the United States. I have a feeling, based on the nature of the case, that it will eventually become big news in the West, but it, you know, nobody like the Guardian or wherever has covered it yet. So again, we're on the ground floor. Spoiler, I did a little bit of original reporting for this, which is exciting for me. Normally I just get to read other people's reporting.
I did zero reporting for this.
Well, what you're doing right now is on the ground journalism. sort of.
Thank you for trying to make me feel important. I appreciate it.
you can put on, you can wear a, get one of those fedoras that they stick a piece of paper into that says press, like in the old days.
Yes, get me an old-timey,
yeah,
like way of speaking.
Hat. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you. Please, go on.
No, yeah, you're not interrupting. You're doing your job, and it's time for me to do mine. So, there has been some Western coverage of Renee Bach. The News in Advance, a local Virginia paper, wrote an article about her in 2017. Its title was, "An Extraordinary Girl Who Said Yes to an Extraordinary God. Bedford Native Finds Home in Uganda." Now, that article, as you might have guessed from the fawning title, presents Renee's story as she wants it to be told, and as most of her friends back home believe it to be. Quote, "When Bedford native Renee Bach arrived in Uganda in September 2007, she was alone. The 18-year-old had landed in Uganda very late at night, only to find her organized ride from the airport was nowhere to be found. Construction had forced the plane to land on an airstrip where she went through immigration at a nearby tent. That experience, coupled with the increase in guns and rustic atmosphere, made Bach begin to question her choice to volunteer at a local children's organization. I'm like, I'm from Little Bedford and I don't know anything about life here, and I got left really late at night at the airport," she said. "I'm just sitting in the parking lot and then got taken to a bunch of different places with random people before I made it to the town I was going to. But really quickly after, I learned to super love it." Super love it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so you get a little bit of a feeling for Renee and kind of her attitude here. Definitely going into it with good intentions. She's a very motivated by her faith, motivated to go and do volunteer work in this country. And
oh,
obviously
boy.
Going to Uganda is her first time in a, I don't like the term third world nation, developing nation. I don't like that either because there's no term for countries where your security is not as guaranteed and the infrastructure is not as built up that isn't in some way a
condescending
little bit, offensive. Yeah, condescending. But this is her first experience going from fucking suburban Virginia to a place where the roads aren't reliable and sometimes shit happens in a tent as opposed to a well-lit building and like that. This is that experience for her. If you've ever traveled through parts of the world like that, you know how the first time can be both like really scary and also like a really exciting and electrifying experience. So she has that sort of experience with Uganda and she falls in love with it, which is not an uncommon thing to do. So Renee's story is that she realizes how many little kids in Uganda were sick and malnourished. So she decided to start her own 501c3 nonprofit. She called it Serving His Children, or SHC. She says the organization initially started as a feeding program that provided food to children, but soon children suffering from malnutrition began to show up at the center's gate in Masisi, a slum in Jinja, Bach said. "And so I thought it was so odd because I had never seen malnutrition before, and I was like, what is happening? This is so weird."
Her quotes are perfect.
Yeah.
And then I was like, WTF? And I turned to my friend and I was like, OMG.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've said every time I've seen malnourished children somewhere in the world. WTF, what's going on?
And also, what is that is a really weird question to ask.
Yeah, she's, again,
sheltered.
Her intentions
she's a sheltered
good,
baby.
Very sheltered. And she goes to a part of the world where, you know, we have no fewer problems in our society, but we're very good at hiding them, especially from upper middle class kids who grow up in a place like Bedford, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And this is a place where the problems aren't hidden. And so she sees all of these issues and is like, I can do something to help. And that's what she starts doing. So very quickly, it becomes clear to her that just getting people food is not enough for her to do. And after seeing a bunch of malnourished kids come through, she decides that the Lord is showing her that there is a need for her to provide more medical care for children.
Quick question. How did she get the money for her to feed the children?
Well, mostly donations. Like she starts a charity and then it's like her family back home is connected to a large church. And so they solicit donations.
Oh, okay. So she's running
money
basically.
Starts to come in.
She's running it on the money of the people back home.
Yeah. And her family ran at this point. I don't think they do anymore, but they ran like one of the family businesses was like a horse therapy center. Like therapy, like,
oh my God,
so,
of course she's a horse girl. That makes
sense. Yeah, she's
so
a horse
sense.
Girl and she comes from horse money. Like
yeah.
that's some serious money. So I'm guessing her church is similarly affluent. So she starts
and mostly
this charity.
Mostly wealthy horses.
Yeah. A lot of Clydesdales dropping, what's horse money? Probably horse shoes?
Arabians? I feel like fancy horse. Isn't that a fancy horse?
Probably. The horses are best in Arabia, right?
That's what I've heard.
That's what Lawrence of Arabia taught me. And I've never been steered wrong by that movie before.
Nope. Mm-mm. Speaking of colonialism and such.
It taught me how to blow up train tracks, which, let me tell you, has come in handy a few times. Now, Renee registers as a rehabilitation center with the Ugandan government, and her charity takes off. Within 5 years, it had an operating budget of $17,000 a month and was helping hundreds and hundreds of little kids every year, which sounds great. You can see why her local Virginia paper wrote a really fawning story about, like, what she was doing out there. Like, it sounds like exactly the kind of story if you're one of these missionaries who believes that, like, missionary work is crucial for the good of the world. You can see why you'd want to publicize this as much as possible, because it sounds like the success story. So that's the that was for years and years and years, from like 2008 up until 2018. That was the story anyone outside of Uganda would have heard about Renee's charity saving his children. But that version of the story leaves a couple of things out. Just a couple of things out. So I'm going to read about those couple of things for another 9 pages or so.
I can't wait.
Are you really excited?
Yeah, I think you should rename this podcast White Man Reading to Me. Because I think that's pretty accurate. But
mansplaining
also,
the podcast, yeah.
Yeah, well. I didn't want to really, I mean, yeah. you're lucky because I love being mansplained too. It's the
I know.
Best.
It's we're all secretly programmed to love it, which is why what I've based my career upon is our internal authority that my voice conveys, despite it being completely unearned by my actual lived experiences.
Like, I mean, look, we all know a white man's voice is worth more.
Yeah, well, it's fucking. I don't know. This is a little bit off topic, but not entirely. I have talked a number of times about the magical power of being a tall white man with a stereotypically kind of authoritative voice. Because it's great for, like, walking into situations where there's, like, police officers and stuff and just, like, taking control of the situation. If you just talk really authoritatively, like, that's how so many scammers get by, is if you are, like, if you look a certain way and sound a certain way in our society, you can just take control of situations, which is why a guy like Beto O'Rourke can decide, I'm born to be president.
Like, totally. And people are like, oh, my God, yeah. He's so charming.
Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, you, Anyway,
thanks for using your white man powers for good. We appreciate it.
At least neutrality.
I mean, I guess that's the best you can really hope for.
that's what I shoot for on this show. Is leave a neutral impact on the world.
Yeah, I would like to leave no print.
Yeah.
Just one of those wash away by the sea kind of prints.
Yeah, I would like my life to be
inconsequential.
Like a Boy Scout campfire where
very carefully hide all of the traces of you having ever been there.
Yeah, that's really should be everybody's goal. But that was not Renee Bach's goal. And see, we tied it back around.
See, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. Now, after we come back from this ad break, because it's time for an ad break, we're going to talk about why exactly it's bad that Renee Bach didn't decide to lead the Boy Scout campfire sort of life. But first, you know what won't leave a horrible mark on the world, Sophia?
No, what?
The products and services that support this podcast.
I love products and services.
Unless we get another Coke Industries ad. Then it's,
and then I will say that I never said that I loved the products and services.
So please buy these products and services unless it's an ad for Coke Industries, which why do they even advertise on podcasts? Who listens to podcasts and needs an oil refinery? Like
my dad, anyway. The Monopoly Man.
Products! Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Give yourself a delicious escape from the afternoon with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
We're back! Okay, so now I just read to you sort of Renee's story the way she presented it, the way it was presented in her local papers. There's another version of the story, and it came out in, I believe, October of 2018. It was a Medium post, and it was published under the name of a group called No White Saviors, but it was written by a young white woman who had gone to Uganda around the same time Renee was starting out her NGO there. And this young woman was a missionary and went to Uganda with dreams of essentially doing the same thing that Renee did. But after a little time in the country, it became clear to her that something really fucked up was happening in Jinja. So I'm going to quote from her Medium article now. There was a child referred to our center who had previously been at serving his children. He and his grandmother stayed with us for several months while he received much-needed medical care. The day after we had received some good news about his heart condition, he died of a sudden heart attack. His three-year-old body had been through a great deal of stress, and it had finally given out. We found out that this little boy had suffered a severe case of malnutrition and was brought to Renee's NGO in Masisi. They got him fat and healthy and then sent him home without so much as any consideration for the root cause of his malnutrition. There was no follow-up, so he fell sick again, so sick that his body was not able to come back from it this time. So, yeah, horrible story. And the author of that Medium article met with Renee and her social worker and told them that she considered them partially responsible for the little boy's death. I explained that had she training or experience in child welfare, she'd know how critical it is to follow up on cases like this. I was frustrated at that point, but all I was asking was that Renee and her team do better follow-up moving forward to prevent kids from falling through the cracks and ending up right where they started. It was soon after this that my concern moved to terror, as I learned that the poor follow-up procedures were far from the most dangerous thing happening at serving his children. It was reported by multiple parties that Renee was actively practicing medicine on children that came to the center. She had medical professionals on staff, but she herself, with no medical training, chose to actively treat and respond to serious medical needs of children in crisis. So
that's some serial killer shit.
We got another fake fucking doctor here, which is a trend on this show.
That is serial killer shit.
Yeah, yeah. It gets serial killery, to coin a new verb, I think. So it became
adjective,
obvious.
But yeah.
Adjectives. Yeah, grammar's not my strong suit.
Okay, you're fired off your own podcast, Sophie.
I was just hoping you'd believe that it was a verb based on the confidence in my voice.
Yeah, you almost sold me on it by just being white and authoritative. I almost bought it.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that is a... Does. Wait a minute.
I do the same thing with pretending I have a driver's license, and it usually works. So, it became obvious to the author of this Medium post, who is anonymous, that Renee had apparently trained herself up on YouTube and started practicing medicine without a license. Local Ugandan news sources spoke to several of her victims. A Ugandan paper called The Spy interviewed a Miss Kakai Rose. She said, "My son, Elijah Benjamin, would be 2 years old today had he been alive. I delivered him at Jinja Hospital on 21st January 2017. I feel his life was snatched from my arms by the actions of Miss Renee Bach. I hope the court can give me justice." Now, that's horrible, but it's really light on details. It's hard to tell exactly what happened there. I found another article from another Ugandan news site called The Independent, which explains why detail is hard to come by in many of these cases. They also interviewed numerous women who claimed to have lost children to Renee Bach and her charity. None of the mothers knows exactly what happened to her child. What they all say is that their children were not growing normally and were possibly malnourished. They all went to Renee Bach for help, and the children died. They spoke to Beatrice Kayaga, a legal officer at the Women's Pro Bono Initiative, which provides legal aid to women in Uganda. The Women's Pro Bono Initiative is currently suing Renee Bach on behalf of dozens and dozens of Ugandan mothers. She is currently being charged in a civil case with contributing to the deaths of more than 100 children who were put into her care. Annette Kakai is one of those women. She told The Independent, "These people did something to my child, and he died. They gave him something. When we got home, he died." Annette's son, Elijah, was not growing normally, so she went to Bach's NGO for help, since their whole thing was treating cases of malnourishment. Annette had heard from a friend that there was a, quote, white lady who would help feed her 1-year-old so he would grow up fat and strong. She said, "Elijah was playing. He was laughing. My worry was that he was too small for his age. The white lady dressed in a doctor's uniform, white lab coat, took my son and went with him to another room. An hour later, Bach left the room and asked Annette to return to the facility the next day. When they returned, she and her baby were put in a car and taken to a health center in another town. Elijah was given some milk. We stayed there for 2 days and they discharged us. She was not given any documentation or explanation for what was done to her child. They didn't say anything. They drove me up to Jinja Amber Court and gave me basically a pile of cash. When we got home, the baby became very weak. He died 3 days later," she sobs. "Those people did something to my child, and he died." So these are kind of the details we have initially coming out of Uganda about what's happening. And it's hard to pin, like, what's going on clearly to a cause, because these are sick kids in a country that has not great access to medical care and hospitals. But the through line is that a number of women have the same story. They take their kids to this clinic. A white woman dressed as a doctor gives their kids some medication, performs treatments on them. The kid dies, and then the lady gives the mother a pile of cash and their kid's body back. Like, that's the story you hear again and again and again.
It's like what we were saying about being, you know, authoritative and stuff. It's like you put on mm-hmm. that white coat and you come in there being all, like, white savory, and you're like, "Hey, you know, I know what to do," and you take the son away from the mother, whereas, like, if maybe you weren't wearing that cloak of, like,
yeah,
protection because of your whiteness and your, like, medical coat, then probably you would be like, "Hey, can I stay in the room for whatever happens?" Yeah. You know,
can I see what's going on?
Yeah,
yeah.
But you're just trusting blindly because you're like, "Well, this person has authority and medical training."
Well, and if you're in a very poor part of Uganda, you've had Doctors Without Borders and similar groups come by, so you've seen a lot of foreigners, Europeans and Americans, in lab coats and carrying stethoscopes, and they've given you good medical care and your family good medical care, and you know that that's, like, a thing that happens in your area. And so this lady shows up, she's dressed the same way as someone from Doctors Without Borders, and you just assume she's actually a doctor and performing actual medicine, which is not the case. I'm going to read another story from a mother named Zubeda Gimbo. According to The Independent, they took her son, Twalali Kifabi, from her while she was heavily pregnant. They only returned him home in a coffin and gave me an envelope with cash in it. They came in a car and left immediately, before burial. I had questions as to what may have killed my child. I needed help and explanations. None was given to me by the woman that came home with the body of my dead child. Now, Miss Gimbo was confused and obviously heartbroken, but she didn't take action until she heard stories that Renee Bach was not actually a doctor. This surprised her because when her son had been admitted to the medical center, she'd seen Bach connect tubes to the child's arms and chest. Beatrice Kayaga, Gimbo's lawyer, claimed sources who worked with Bach saw her surf the internet for medical advice and call doctors back in the United States when she had questions on the treatment she administered. So again, Renee Bach's intentions seem to have been good. She saw that there was not enough competent medical care here and decided that she could administer it herself, and that, like, in the absence of actual trained doctors, her just Skyping a doctor or looking on YouTube for guides on how to solve issues would be enough to handle it. So it's both like this...
I'm suspicious as fuck, though, yeah. Because it seems like she was just, like, trying to find a cover for, like, being an angel of death.
You know, I wonder about that. The evidence I have makes me think she was really trying to do good. I think it's more, which doesn't mitigate at all the fact that she got a lot of kids killed.
What I'm saying is, if you're noticing that you keep killing children while you're trying to heal them, if that was what you were really trying to do, wouldn't you be like, oh, clearly I'm not doing this well. I should probably stop. Unless your whole point was to feel like you're caring and whatever, but then actually to be like, well, you know, probably it's a mercy to murder them. Don't you think? Just to have access?
We'll see as we get a little bit through this. I read through her blog a lot, which has since been scrubbed by the internet. But
she has a blog?
She used to have a blog, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we'll be talking about it a lot. There were hundreds of kids she dealt with, and most of them didn't die. And most of them, you know, it's the kind of thing where, like, you know how people can convince themselves that, like, whatever sort of weird snake oil they take heals them, just because most problems you have, if you're a healthy person, you will eventually get over. So if you're, like, rubbing fucking oregano oil on yourself as your body heals naturally, you can convince yourself, oh, this oregano oil is healing me or whatever, just because, like, that's the body. So she dealt with a lot of kids, some of whom she was able to give actual help to just because she had access to the money to give these kids nutritional supplements, some of whom just got better on their own. But she has all these stories about kids getting better on her blog, some of which she attributes to, like, miracles and stuff, which I'm guessing, like, I think that's another explanation than that she's a serial killer, is just most of the kids she saw didn't die. So she assumed, well, you know, I'm giving medical care to these kids. They can't all survive, but I'm still doing a good thing, which gives her more confidence to treat more kids, which means up she ends up killing more kids, too, because she's taking on more and more people and getting further and further out of her actual area of competence, which is raising money to provide food for kids.
I guess I did not realize that she, in addition to killing a large portion of kids, also saved a larger portion, or maybe they got back better on their own. But I didn't realize that there was a higher survival rate than death rate, because I was in my Georgia tan brain. I'm like, probably 100%.
We're not talking 100%. It's impossible to say what the rate is, because I don't know how many kids she actually dealt with. But it also is like most of the kids she sees are just kids who are, they're not dying. They're malnourished. So if she's able to, like, hook these kids up with, like, nutritional supplements and better food, then that actually does help them. And then, you know, they go off in it. So she's, I think that's part of, and that's part of why she gets, I think, more and more into providing actual medical care, is the more kids who come by with minor problems and she's able to help, the more convinced she becomes that she can do stuff like give them fucking blood transfusions, which is where this story ends up. So again, none of this mitigates the fact that she was performing unlicensed medical care on children that got them killed, because what she's doing is horribly fucked up. I don't think she's a serial killer. I think she's someone who got way overconfident because of her ability to provide moderate help to some of these kids, and that leads her to kill others of them. That's my interpretation. We'll see if you agree as I finish the story. There is some evidence that she got addicted over time to playing doctor on these kids. Kayaga, that legal representative, Renee, says that Renee hired social workers to comb government health facilities for new children she could treat. So she eventually starts actually seeking out really sick kids that she can perform medical operations on.
That's fucking Dr. Mangler shit. She's a serial fucking murderer.
Absolutely not right. And this was apparently common knowledge within the Ugandan missionary community. The author of that Medium post wrote, "Taking children from actual hospitals and medical centers, Renee and her team would bring children back to the center in Masisi. Renee herself would openly talk about how much she enjoyed hands-on medical care." Now, I would be remiss in my journalistic duties if I did not note that Renee's family has responded to the allegations made against their daughter. They deny that Renee performed any inappropriate medical procedures outside of her certifications in CPR, basic first aid, and emergency stabilization. They claim that Saving His Children, her NGO, eventually did hire doctors and nurses, and that any procedures Renee helped in were carried out under the supervision of these professionals. As evidence, they attach an image macro. It shows Renee attaching a tube to a patient, which is apparently a fuller version of a picture that was attached to that Medium article and uses evidence that Renee was performing medical procedures. In the version of the picture that the family sends over, you can see a man standing behind Renee, who they claim is a licensed doctor, overseeing her work. So Renee's mom attached a quote to the picture, "In seeking truth, you must find both sides of the story." Now, that's a quote from Walter Cronkite. Now, Renee's family, I think specifically her mother, published an open letter that kind of is set at rebuting all of these claims made against her daughter. And that's sort of the overview of the claims. They say that, number one, you know, children in this area, there's a high death rate for malnourished children. So, yes, some kids in the care of the center died, but that's to be expected. They reported all of them to the authorities. They had doctors on staff. Renee never performed any inappropriate medical procedures. These are the claims made by the family. And the case has not made its way through the court system yet. But there are some reasons to doubt Renee and her family's side of the story. One of them is the fact that she had a blog that she maintained. Now, Sophia,
can't wait to hear about this. Dear Diary, today I murdered three children. It was an okay day.
It was
I had tilapia for dinner.
One of the things that's immediately sketchy about Renee's side of the case is that she scrubbed her blog from the internet after the lawsuit was filed, which makes you think that maybe there was something incriminating in the blog.
She's like, oh no, I should have never been writing about my murders publicly.
Yeah, I shouldn't have been writing about the crimes I was committing.
Why did I not know that? Damn it.
Yeah. Now, and this is, again, part of why I think she's not intentionally killing these kids, is she details her breaking the law a bunch in this blog and doesn't seem to notice that what she's writing is fucked up.
Well, she's also not smart, clearly.
Yeah, I don't think she's a genius. Now, I want to give a thanks, first off, to the young writer, Nikki Gagnon, who told me the name of Renee's blog so that I could find it on the Wayback Machine, which is why we have access to all of these blog posts, because... obviously, nothing on the internet has ever gone forever. And there will be links to Renee Bach's blog on our website, behindthebastards.com, if you want to read any of her posts.
I am going to do that.
Yeah. Right now, I'm going to have Sophie show you what the landing page of Renee's blog looked like. And the name of her blog was "But the Greatest of These is Love," which I think is a chunk from a Bible quote. Now, Sophia, how would you describe that
blog?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, boy.
That's, I don't.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's some, it's like a perfect encapsulation of
this
idea of white saviorism.
It's got a real exploitation vibe. Real serious exploitation vibe.
Yeah, it's a very close-up picture of a malnourished child on his mother's arms with very large eyes looking up at the camera on a background of what looks like a burlap sack, I guess she superimposed the picture onto. Not a great graphic designer. And her blog in general is filled with lurid pictures of sick and injured Ugandan children. Dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of them. You might call it suffering porn.
I was just going to call it that.
Yeah, that's the overwhelming feeling you get from looking through her blog. Many of the pictures are before and afters, showing children after time in her care. Others just seem to emphasize the suffering and pitiable state of her patients. I can't overemphasize how many pictures of sick children there are on this site, and I have no evidence that... There's also pictures of her performing operations on people. I have no evidence that the people in those pictures consented to have their images used, or that the parents of the kids in those pictures consented to have their images used.
Who knows if those children were murdered by her? Like, that is so fucked up.
Some of them may have been, because she does talk
saying.
About some kids dying in her blog. Now, she regularly talks about performing medical operations on children in this blog, although she always uses the term "we" for this, so it's possible that there's medical professionals with her performing these procedures for some of them, but she's very vague about it. She almost never refers to doctors being present. She occasionally mentions a nurse being present, but there is no evidence given in the blog that she's working under their direction or guidance. She tells frequent stories of children being healed by miracles in her clinic after doctors in cities gave them prognoses of doom. And while I was browsing through her blog, I found some posts that directly contradict the claims that her mother made in that open letter. But we're going to get into that after some ads, because this is a great time for ads.
Buy stuff.
Buy stuff, buy a product, unless that product is a charity that is actually killing kids in
Uganda. Always do your research.
Always do your research before donating money to some fucking 20-something-year-old rich kids charity. But don't do your research before supporting the companies that support this show. Is that a good ad pivot, Sophie?
No.
No? You're not happy with that one? See?
I mean, like, it's hard not having you in person, but the fact that now I'm sitting across from Sophie and we can just both frown at you. It's mm-hmm. at the same time. It's pretty great. It's like looking in a beautiful blonde mirror.
I can feel y'all's disapproval coursing over the airwaves, traveling through the internet and beaming out of the screen of my laptop. And
how could
and
you even tell it apart
me.
From like regular disapproval that you just would get from living in Portland?
You know, they're different. There's different flavors of disapproval that you get, but Sophie and Sophia, you both have, I would say, a tangier taste of disapproval, and it really fuels my heart in the same way that the products and services you're about to hear ads for fuel this podcast with their advertising dollars. Bam! That's a fucking ad pivot. Are you proud of me now, Sophie? Okay, well, it's as good as it's getting. Products! Robert Evans here, and as a kid, I loved playing Monopoly, but my favorite thing about it was robbing the bank, you know, working with my friends to pull over a con on somebody else, even heisting their money sometimes. And now Monopoly Go brings that fun to your phone. It's one of those games that can bring out the most devious version of ourselves. You can bankrupt your friends by pulling heists on their vaults and even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with your friends to unlock prizes or try to top the leaderboards. And whether you're working with somebody or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is a huge blast. Go download it now for free on the App Store or Google Play.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Give yourself a delicious escape from the afternoon with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
We're back! I'm still proud of myself for that ad pivot. Just like Renee Bach was proud of herself for her medical charity. Anyway, so we're talking about Renee's blog, and I found a post in 2014 as I was reading through very old articles in this manslaughterer's, child slaughterer's, I'm not sure what the legal term for her crimes is, blog, that seemed to contradict directly the claims made by her mother. If you will remember, she stated, like, that open letter stated that Renee did not perform any sort of medical operation without, like, the direct supervision of doctors and nurses.
That I also love that the evidence was a picture of a man standing behind her. She's like, it's a man. There
it's
was
a
man there. Are you kidding me? How could you accuse her of any malpractice? A man was standing behind her.
Was standing right behind her.
Behind, so I'm gonna in read... front of every... fake doctor is a murderous woman also pretending to be a doctor.
That guy might have been a real doctor, but the fact of the matter is there's documentation that she was performing a shitload of medical interventions without a doctor present. So I'm going to read a quote from a 2014 blog post. The baby's name is Patricia. She is 9 months old. She had fallen sick 3 weeks ago. Her mom had taken her to a health center, but there was no improvement. She continued to get worse despite my treatment that was given. One of their relatives told them about a hospital in Masisi with a white doctor. So that Sunday morning, they left their home early and journeyed to Jinja in hope of finding someone, anyone, who could help their daughter. So you can see right there, at no point does she say, of course I wasn't a doctor. Of course I wasn't running a hospital. She presents this as like... kind of like she's proud that she's become known as the white doctor in Uganda.
Yeah. She's so, I don't know if you heard about the local angel saving everybody, but
hero.
She and I are the same.
That's the feeling you get reading this book. Renee, of course, leapt into action. While I was listening, I was attempting to diagnose the many problems that could potentially be at hand. Diagnose, see? Got it, malaria, positive. HB 3.2, both are a big problem, and together they create an even bigger, most likely fatal problem for such a small child. She needed a blood transfusion. And fast. After doing a search for blood around Jinja Town, we found her type and it was a match. We started the transfusion, praying with every drip. About 30 minutes into her transfusion, she started showing signs of having anaphylactic reaction. Not good. Not good at all. Her neck and face started swelling. A lot. I'm talking about a ton of swelling. Within 15 minutes, her breathing went from bad to worse. Her throat was beginning to close. We gave her an antihistamine and off to Kampala we went. We arrived at one of the best hospitals in Kampala by around 8 p.m. and then sat in the ER for over 3 hours waiting to see a doctor. It was a very long night to say the least, but surprisingly, she made it to see the morning. So Renee is posting in this about giving a child a blood transfusion and giving that kid the wrong blood, which causes an allergic reaction, which can very, very easily be fatal.
Why did she say we found her match?
Yeah.
That's how dumb she is. She didn't even
They're both
know.
Blood!
She's so bad at faking
this blood's red. This blood's red.
Yeah, she's like, it looks like it's a match. This is a human. This is a
it
human.
Tastes the same.
One human go in one other human. That worked for me.
It gets grosser because Renee's story again. This is part of why I don't think she's intentionally killing these kids. She shows no self-awareness at how like a person reading this would be like. You just gave a kid the wrong kind of blood. What the fuck, lady? And she goes on to talk luridly about how in the ER, they found out that she and this little kid had the same blood type. So she was able to donate her own blood to save this child who she'd actually put in danger in the first place by giving the wrong blood initially. Which, like...
That's so crazy.
It's so fucked up. It's so fucked up.
She's definitely an insane person who needs definitely the
adoration a crazy
person. Of others and for people to be like, oh my God, yes.
What a hero. You gave this kid
savior.
Your own blood. Yeah. After giving the kid the wrong blood. Now, in that open letter published by her family, they claim saving his children has perfect records of every child they treated and every child that died in her care. They say Renee is blameless and all of that. But goddamn if Renee's blog does not paint almost the same picture as painted in that Medium post. There is evidence that the open letter published by her family contains at least a few direct lies. For one thing, Renee's family claims that they first brought a real doctor onto their team 3 days a week in 2011. Perhaps they did. But again, Renee's own blog posts say otherwise. See, and this is the little bit of reporting I got to do here. Because I wanted to make sure I wasn't slandering this. It would be totally possible that like the shit I saw on Twitter and whatnot was wrong. This was just a case of like, yeah, some kids are going to die. It's like it's a tough place to perform medical care. I didn't want to like get sued by the family. So I was kind of looking for a smoking gun in the blog that showed that there were lies in the open letter. And I found at least one thing that suggests that. Because that blood transfusion thing happened, I think, in October of 2011. And the next year, in May of 2012, Renee posted an update with the title, "We Need Your Help." And the post details a story about a woman with a sick child coming in the night. Renee claims she and her staff had to drive around to find a doctor who could see them. After knocking on just about every door in the hospital, I found a nurse. She promised to call a doctor and then disappeared again. I made my way back to the ER and watched, waited, prayed, and for almost the next 3 hours, the child in my arms continued to drift away and the doctor never came. This story, sadly, is a familiar one, a scenario that is played out for many sick children that God sends into our care. It is a terrifying and heart-wrenching experience for mothers who have sought refuge and help in our home, as well as frustrating for me as I seek medical expertise beyond my own in a world that is often just not available. This story and others like it would be different if we had a doctor. So that's May of 2012 when she posts that, which seems to make it crystal clear that Saving His Children had no doctor on staff in May of 2012. Renee explicitly spells out in that post that her staff includes 3 full-time Ugandan nurses and medical equipment that is not even often available in local hospitals, but laments not having a doctor on staff. The whole goal of that post was to raise money, $15,000 a year, to hire a doctor. Now here's a quote from the open letter published by Renee's mom. "As a board, we have been approached in the past with concerns about the amount of medical work being done at our center and Renee's personal involvement. Once in the fall of 2011, our response was to hire a Ugandan doctor 3 days a week to work with the nurses to establish treatment plans and to be available for emergency consults." Now, that note about concerns in the fall of 2011 is clearly a reference to Renee transfusing the wrong blood into a child. But the letter of what her family writes in the open letter makes it sound like Saving His Children immediately hired a doctor in response to that. Renee's blog makes it clear that 7 months later, in May of 2012, they still had no doctor on staff. And we don't know how long after that post it took them to actually hire one.
I just love that... The number one thing that you would think from a title like Saving His Children that you would have is someone who could literally save a life, aka a doctor. It's like she's like, no, let's buy this dialysis machine first. It's like probably not the right order.
Maybe get the doctor first.
Maybe invest in the doctor. I don't know.
And I think I did wrongly say, I wrote it out wrong. When I announced that, when I started reading the story about the blood transfusion, I said I found a post from 2014. That post was from 2011, which I made clear later on. I just want to make it super clear here. So yeah, that seems to be
I won't
clear...
put up with this. You know that, right? I will
I'm
not
sorry.
Put up with
I'm
this
sorry,
amount of inaccuracy.
Sophia.
I was led to believe that you're a professional.
I'm not.
Can I go? Thank you so much.
So yeah, that seems pretty damning to me, right? You've got this letter where they're saying we had concerns in 2011 and we hired a doctor, and then you've got Renee 7 months later saying we don't have a doctor and we need one. Like, that seems like a pretty clear example. Not only is number one her post in 2011 a clear example that she's performing blood transfusions, which goes against what they say in the open letter, but the other post in May is a clear evidence that they didn't have a doctor when her family claims they had already hired a doctor. So like, I don't know. That doesn't mean everything that they claim in the open letter about their clinic is a lie, but it means at least one thing in that open letter is a lie, which makes me believe the local Ugandan reporting and the reporting in that Medium post even more, because everything they say is internally consistent and is consistent with Renee's own blog, which was written contemporaneously. So I don't know.
It's pretty clear she doesn't want the children to be saved. She wants to be known for saving children, which is not the same thing at all. And to her, I don't think the lives matter at all, which is why I still think she's like a creepy serial killer.
Yeah, it's we'll talk at the end of this about like where we wind up on exactly what we think her motivations are. Although I don't think her motivations really matter. What matters is that she's giving kids the wrong blood and stuff, and some of them die. Which I think So, having read through Renee's blog and several well-reported articles from local Uganda journalists, I feel comfortable saying that I think we've reported on both sides of the story now, and it seems like something really messed up is going on here. The author of that Medium article alleges that several members of the Ugandan missionary community expressed their concern about Saving His Children at varying points. Many of us who have tried to hold Renee and SHC accountable have been lambasted, yelled at, and referred to as the enemy by supporters of Renee. The home church that Ms. Bach attended in Jinja, as well as a significant portion of the missionary community here, supported and defended her. Now, according to Spy Uganda's reporting, or The Spy in Uganda, Bach family members seem to make up the majority of the staff running Saving His Children. So her mother is the U.S. director of Saving His Children. Her 22-year-old sister, Aline, works with the organization's marketing and social media team. So, like, the actual staff that runs the organization is all members of the Bach family. But the majority of the employees are basically part-time Ugandan employees. So the actual people doing most of the work on the ground and providing care are usually Ugandans and Renee. And the people running the company and doing things like publishing open letters that have at least one major inaccuracy in them are Renee's mom and sister. So that's how this charity is run. Now, earlier in this episode, I mentioned Nikki Gagnon, one of the writers who covered this story. She's the person who told me how to find Renee's old blog posts, and Nikki's done a lot of digging into this case. Her coverage might be the best that I've found so far. For one thing, she delves deeper into Renee's blog than anyone else. Quote, one harrowing passage from June 12, 2011 follows Bach as she simultaneously drives a vehicle and administers emergency oxygen via a bag valve mask to an infant. She writes, oxygen was finished and I had been driving and bagging Rahim at the same time. It was working, but wasn't exactly safe. My sister and two of my best friends in the world came to my rescue! ! They met me along the road with the oxygen cord, another set of hands to drive, and some emotional support! The baby later died.
Wow, that's too many exclamation points for a post that ends with a baby death.
Yeah, like, that's too many exclamation points.
Paying attention to the important part. She's like, oh my God, I have the best friends in the world. R.I.P. baby.
R.I.P.
like,
baby.
What the fuck are your priorities?
Yeah. Now, Nikki helped me iron out some of the more confusing details of the case. That Medium post had concluded by noting that Saving His Children shut down in 2015, but other coverage suggested that the nonprofit was still operational. It turns out that Saving His Children shut down briefly in 2015 when criminal charges were filed against Renee Bach with the Jinja Police and the Ugandan Ministry of Health. Then the organization started back up again and has been running ever since. So they shut it down briefly because there were criminal charges against them, and then started it back up as soon as they felt like the smoke had cleared. Nikki, yeah. So that does make it seem like it's a compulsive need for her to operate this place.
100%. Yeah. It's like, you know, those Munchausen syndrome moms that like need the attention that they get from like their kid being fake sick.
Yeah, I think that's very much what's going on here. Now, Nikki interviewed Olivia Alasso, a social worker and a member of the group No White Saviors. Olivia Alasso is actually from Jinja. She's a Ugandan. And Olivia says that she interviewed a number of families who claimed their children were harmed by Renee Bach. She shared the story of a family from Buzika, a rural town several hours away from Jinja, whose baby passed away after intervention from Bach back in August. Alasso said, that means Renee is still practicing medicine. She went on to explain that Bach supervised the child's care at a clinic and ultimately released the infant after several days. According to the child's mother, who was interviewed by Alasso, the baby died after developing breathing complications, despite being evaluated by Bach for malnutrition at the Kigandalo Health Center in Mayugi. So, yeah, she's, at least as recently as like 2018, is still performing medical interventions, not with a doctor present. You know,
cool. Some medical with like air quotes.
With air quotes. Yeah, medical in that she wears a stethoscope.
Yeah, she put on a white robe, so.
I will say this, by the standards of the 1920s, she is a doctor.
That is a very high standard.
Again, those standards are, has a white coat and stethoscope.
Amazing. People are like, you could afford your own stethoscope?
Yeah.
Welcome.
Wow. You
Dr.
must be
Evans,
a doctor.
Welcome.
Oh, I would 100% have been a doctor in the 20s, but I would just have sold people morphine, mainly so I could afford to buy morphine myself.
In the 20s, they still like jerked off women, right?
Yeah, they sure did.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Just making that's sure it was still real fucked up.
That's kind of your best case scenario with a 20s doctor, because if they're jerking you off, they're not pouring mercury into you.
I don't know. I feel like you probably do both.
Yeah, you probably
and
do
also
a lot
you're
of both.
Assuming they're good at jerking you off.
Like,
that could really be, you know, a bad fingering is really is real bad.
One county doctor who was just the best at it.
Yeah.
And like, was like the most popular guy in town.
All the women, he's been married 5 times. All the women go to him. They're like, okay. They're like, there's another doctor on staff. They're like, yeah, we don't really want to see him.
We don't really want him. We bunch of dull, oaky farmers sitting around being like, Boy, Dr. Johnson's real popular. My wife keeps baking him cakes. She gets sick all the time.
How often you think a woman got to go to the woman doctor? She sees him about once, I don't know, twice every day. Like, oh, that's too many times.
All the women folk are outside of the doctor's office again. Feels like this happens a lot.
And it's like they finally like figure out his skills. They're like, the fingers on his right hand seem to be, the nails seem to be trimmed real nice. You think it's got anything to do with that? And the women are like, yes, it totally does. Please trim your fucking fingernails. Well, you know, I've done my job. Mm-hmm. I made this about fingering, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And in a way, isn't everything? No, this story is about child murder.
Just let me get a little fingering in, Robert. Just a little bit.
A little bit. A couple of fingers
just the
in
pinky.
Between.
Give me a little pinky just, action.
Yeah. Well, we've had our
Sophie
pinky
Sophie held
action.
Up her pinky in a very authoritative way.
That is the job of a producer.
I would trust you to finger me, Sophie. You're welcome. Robert, I don't know. We don't know each other all enough, honestly.
And I'm like 1,000 miles away, which is,
that's the number one thing that...
And my fingernails are horrible.
Gross. No. Why'd you tell your listeners that? Your female listeners literally just unsubscribed from the podcast.
Because I'm all about cinema verite, which is a term I invented to describe how I do my podcast. We talked about it in the Hubbard episode. It's known.
Yes.
Now, I want to get back to a... It is known. I want to get back to Nikki Gagnon's article, because she also interviewed a Ugandan former employee of Saving His Children. This is like a local person who actually worked at Rene Bock's clinic. And this guy's recollections are rather damning. For us, we saw many mistakes, but whenever you happen to tell her, she was not accepting, and you know it is such a problem. The worker detailed a case where he watched Bock give a child a blood transfusion under a tree and claims he saw that sort of behavior numerous times. Now, I'm not a medical professional. But I have enough medical training to say blood transfusions are not generally performed under trees.
Whatever. That sounds like the perfect ambiance. Are you a little bit jealous? I could find like a nice eucalyptus, just lay down underneath it, get a needle in my arm. It sounds romantic.
It does sound
relaxing.
Who wants
to lay with me in a meadow and get medical treatment? Administered by a non-professional. Raise your hand. Nice.
You know, she used to behave as if she's a professional, yet she was not. Second to all that, all the volunteers that used to come at the center, they used to handle medical issues. And I remember one day confronting the doctors, the African doctors. Why these whites? They are playing on our children's lives. You know what the doctor told me? He told me, even me, I've been seeing that. But you know, a boss is a boss. There's nothing I can do.
Whoa.
Now, this is a guy speaking who's being quoted. English is not his first language, obviously. And so I don't know exactly how he meant the term, they are playing on our children. But I
know
suspect...
what he means because English is my second language. I think he's like, they're playing with their lives. Like they're using them as like experiments. It's not serious to them.
Exactly.
Those people don't have value.
That's how I interpreted it, too. I think, he's saying that Renee is playing with Ugandan children as if they're her toys, like playing doctor, playing pretend with human lives. I want to show you a picture Rene Bock took of herself and posted on social media. Now, this is her as she wants to be seen, and I
Are
think
you
it is very...
fucking kidding me?
Yeah. Describe that fucking picture, Sophia.
I mean, it's like a combo of that photo of Melania when she decorated the White House for Christmas, and it just looked like it was, like, haunted by all the families that have been, like, fucked up by the administration. It was just very gray and white and dull, and she was kind of in the middle as the queen. This has that combined with, like, a real... what's the show with the bonnets and the red?
Handmaid's Tale.
Thank you. It's got a real Handmaid's Tale vibe also. And it's like she's like, I am Mother Teresa. There's white glow around me. I am the bitch.
She's standing in the center of a room with a couple of empty cradles in it, and her hands are down at her side with her palms facing forward and her head bowed down in like a gesture of religious contrition.
There is a window. So it's easier to steal the babies also.
Yeah, like if you keep your palms out.
Yeah.
she's backlit by a light shining through a window, which makes her look almost like she's got like a halo, like she's a saint. And then the walls of the room she's in are plastered in pictures of sick African children, hundreds and hundreds of pictures of little shirtless babies, like the ones that she puts on her blog post all around her. Like, it is
this Mother Teresa bitch right here.
Yeah. Mother Teresa bitch is the fucking, like, you couldn't have a more white savior-y picture if you tried. Like, if you were making a movie, a horror movie about a white savior character, and you put this picture in it, everyone watching it would be like, well, this is a little bit over the top. Come on, guys. Yeah,
this is on the nose.
A little much, huh? But this is fucking how Renee Bach sees herself, or at least wants to be seen.
It's,
I don't know how the fuck
she
sees herself.
So telling, man.
Yeah.
It's so telling.
Yeah. I want to read a little bit more from that local Virginia News article I found on Bach that I opened this article with, or this episode with. It interviewed Richard Hart, her former pastor, and he talked a lot about Renee's humility, claiming she doesn't promote herself and praising her teachability. A teenage girl out of rural Virginia going and making such a huge difference in Uganda and then just to stay with it for all these years has been a real testament to her heart and her character and the humility that she has. Yes, when I think of humble, I think untrained blood transfusions.
Yeah. Also, I feel like it's always kind of a red flag to me when, like, the first time a white person tries to help anybody, they're like, I'm going to go to another country and fix it. It's like, you should just be exposed to the poverty and malnutrition and shit in America. Yeah. And then, you know, maybe try to see how you can help that community. It'll be less of a shock for your system. Yeah. Maybe you won't co-opt other people's fucking like lives like that. And you can maybe make a little bit of progress. I don't know why immediately. I feel like it's got to be such a superiority complex. Like, we are better than black people. We're better than Africa. We need to get our hands on it. We need to help because we know best. And it is like, such a fucked up attitude.
It is. And it's like, even though I don't have any expertise in this, because my attitude towards this country, and it goes back to like the Kony 2012 thing, building this idea that Uganda is just irredeemably fucked up because things are so fucked up. And this is also, you see it in the open letter her mom wrote where they talk about how often kids die in Uganda. Because it's so bad here, it's okay that I'm completely untrained wandering into this situation because the situation is so fucked up that anything I do is fine. Like if she had, like you said, if she'd started by like volunteering at local homeless shelters and like running a shelter trying to deal with malnourished people, and if she built a really effective program in her local hometown and helped a few hundred people and then gone to Uganda and been like, I'm going to try to do this here, I'd be like, okay, well, she's got some expertise. It's the same thing as like, it's not white saviorism if you are a white doctor and you travel to Uganda to offer free medical care. It's not being a white savior to be part of Doctors Without Borders or whatever. You spend a lot of time to gain a real skill that is in short supply in an area, and then you travel there to give part of yourself. That's totally fine. The white saviorism is this person with no skills, with a high school degree, rolling into this place and being like, yeah, I can do complex medical shit. What does it matter if I fuck up? Everyone's already fucked here because it's Uganda. Like, that's your attitude.
Yeah.
That's, like, that's what's so offensive.
And it's just so dangerous to not be aware of your own bias to the point where it never occurs to you to not start there.
Oh, like, it does occur to her. I'm about to read that part. So, in her interview for that article in Virginia, Bach addressed directly the idea of white savior complex. She claims her desire to avoid that is why she hired mostly local Ugandans. It's a real thing. There are people that go there and probably do what they do for themselves, and the self-gratification from helping people that are less than or who are super poor or assisting orphans. I think all too often we as Americans, we think, oh, well, they're just incapable, so we better go and help these people. I think that's the mindset of a lot of people, and I would probably say that I even had a little bit of that mindset when I first went of like, oh, well, maybe they just can't do it, she said, but they can, and I definitely learned that very quickly, that I'm definitely not needed here.
Then leave, bitch.
Yeah, like, I agree with you on that. You're not fucking necessary. And you're making the situation arguably a lot worse.
If you found out there's no need for you, fucking leave. Yeah. I just don't understand. I mean, I do understand she's a crazy person. But Jesus Christ. And, oh, speaking of Jesus Christ, it's even more fucked up to tie this into religion, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, which it
that
is.
Somehow is like, you're holy and like special and doing God's work when you're literally killing children. And it's giving you this whole like, oh, you know, my mission's not only like good by earthly standards, it's also good by godly standards. And it's like, you're the furthest thing away from that.
And there's so many stories in her blog of like, this kid will get sick and the doctors just say there's nothing that can be done. And then the kid will get better and she'll say it's like this miracle that we healed this child, even though like they said it was impossible. This is like clearly God healing him. And the kid goes away and it's like, well, but okay, there's a ton of fatal illnesses where it's very common for people to get better or seem better for a couple of weeks at a time, because that's just how illness works, and to have a few good days before they take a turn. And we don't know the whole stories of these kids, because I don't have a whole lot of faith in fucking Rene Bach's ability to keep records on these children or let us know how often they don't survive, you know,
or properly diagnose them ever with no medical training.
And that's the thing that Medium article presents, is like, it starts with a story of a kid who goes to Rene Bach, very malnourished. Rene's clinic gets the kid nourished again and then just sends him off, not thinking about the fact that like, well, no, this kid has a diagnosed heart condition. It can be dangerous when you're malnourished to feed someone a bunch and get them a bunch of weight and then send them back out into the world, because like, number one, that's a huge strain on their system. And there's a reason that doctors are very careful with how they, when they have a renourish, like, like that's part of the problem, is like, when we get these stories about her saving kids, these stories that I suspect convinced her that she was good at this, like, she doesn't know if she's actually saving any of the kids she's claimed she's saved, because she's not doing long-term follow-up.
There's no follow-up at all. Yeah.
Exactly. And like, yeah, it's fucked up.
And that thing about, I have a really like morbid note on that. Like, yes, that's a common thing with, if you're treating someone who is hugely malnourished, that you can't let them eat their fill.
Yeah.
It's too much. It's, they can't go from having no food to all the food. My grandpa, who was in World War II, said that when they were like outside one of the death camps, a couple of like prisoners that had run away from the concentration camps or whatever were so starving and malnourished, and like they gave them food, and my grandpa was like, it was really hard and heartbreaking to not let them eat a lot, because they would still beg you for food and they like need it and want it, and you just have to be like, no, you can only have a little bit at a time. And it's like, even somebody like that knows that, who was just, you know it from experience, you don't know it from medical training, but just the fact that you can be more informed as a soldier about this than even a woman that's pretending to be a doctor.
It's super fucked up. You know, I have a little bit of a white savior story myself, although when I was 22 or something like that, my girlfriend at the time and I went to Guatemala with a Catholic church in this charity called, I think the name was Kids Saving Kids. And I was not Catholic. I was an atheist at that point. And I didn't have much of an interest in the church at all. But like, I wanted to go to Guatemala because I wanted to see Guatemala. And the idea behind what we were doing on paper is that we were going there to help build a clinic. So I was like, okay, well, I'll get to see Guatemala and we'll build a clinic and that'll be great. And there was a chunk of the charity that was useful because a guy who was an actual doctor came along and he like provided, he was up every day, like talking to women and doing like women's health issues and stuff. And that was great. But the rest of us, it turned out that building a clinic was, we didn't build a clinic. We went out into the middle of this impoverished village in like about 2 hours outside of Antigua. And we built a barbed wire fence around a trash field. And the main purpose of us building it was so that we could do a big photo op with the mayor and the lady who ran the charity, who was very proud of herself and spent every day sitting at the hotel, clearly on vacation. And then at the end of it, got to do a big photo op with all these kids that she gave shoes and like the mayor of this village while we like stood around this like trash fence that we'd built. And it was this realization for me of like, oh, the only thing that we needed to do was send the doctor. And the doctor complained that, like, he didn't actually have much in the way of medicine to hand out to these people. And if instead of the rest of us coming, we just sent the doctor, with the value
spent
of
that
our
money, yeah.
Yeah, on antibiotics for all of these women who, because the water was bad, like all of these women had UTIs in this village. Like that was the thing. He was like, I've never seen this, but like there's not much I can do because I don't have any medication for them. If the 20, 30 kids that like flew out there and got put up in a hotel for a week and whatever, if we just put that money into antibiotics, real good would have been done. But instead, there's a barbed wire fence around a trash field in a rural village in Guatemala. So,
yep.
Yeah, it's really dumb. So if you want to help places like this, maybe give some money to Doctors Without Borders or something. Actual medical professionals. Who, yeah. Yeah. Like that's
check
great.
Charity Navigator. Do a little bit of research.
Figure out. Yeah.
There's a lot anyway, of really bad charities.
Yeah, yeah. It turns out that everything's terrible.
I mean, as a breast cancer survivor, I'm super sensitive about people giving money to like Susan G. Komen or like really shitty breast cancer organizations that just really spent the money on like publicity and overhead and never actually on women.
So. Yeah, it's crazy how often stuff like that goes down and how when you actually go to places where people need help, the folks doing actual useful work get very little money, like in are operating on a shoestring budget, whereas like the groups that get the most money because they're able to do big high profile PR events which yep. cost a lot of money. And yeah, it's fucked up. Doctors Without Borders is pretty sweet, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, give them your money.
Donate.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, Sophia, you wanna plug your pluggables at the end of this very happy episode about child murder?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like people want more. You know what I mean? How could they not want more of me after this?
How could they not?
You can find me, I host a podcast, co-host a podcast called Private Parts Unknown. It's about love and sexuality around the world. And you can find me at the Sophia, T-H-E-S-O-F-I-Y-A on Twitter and Instagram.
Twinstagram, Sophia, Private Parts Unknown. Check her out. You can also check me out. I'm Robert Evans, and I'm on this podcast. You already have checked me out, and there's nothing more you can do. Nothing at all. So go home. And
keep on living your life. You're
keep
doing
on living
great.
Your life, knowing that you have checked me out, check out Sophia. I think that's everything. Is that everything, Sophie? Is she shaking her head angrily?
She's so
at me?
Over you.
She's very over me. That's because I didn't plug any of the pluggables. I was just trying to exasperate Sophie because it's what I live for.
I think she got it.
I think she got it. I think she got that message. You can find us on BehindTheBastards.com. You can find me at IWriteOK on Twitter. You can find this podcast on Twitter and Instagram at @BastardsPod. You can find us on TeePublic, where you can buy a shirt that does not help a good cause, but will go to pay for my coffee and narcotics. BehindTheBastards at TeePublic.com. Or you can donate to Medicine Sans Frontiers or something like that. That's the end of the podcast. I'm sorry, Sophie. Please forgive me.
Where's my apology?
What did I do wrong to you, Sophia?
Just dead babies over and over. You've sapped the humor from me.
We're gonna talk about YouTube in the next episode.
I feel like this is a trap.
Yeah, it is. It's always a trap with Behind the Bastards. That's the episode.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Brakes? We can save you 15% on that. We have OE quality Duralast brake pads and rotors in stock, ready for pickup or delivery. We also have calipers, brake fluid, tools, and anything else you'll need to do the job right. When you get Duralast pads and rotors together, you'll save 15%. It's just part of what makes us America's number one brakes destination.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.